Today, we've got the why and how of hybrid cloud. So our goal today is to give you a bit of an overview of why you might want to look at hybrid cloud and how you go about doing it in your environment. We're also going to share with you some of our experience from the field and our learnings on doing this for our customers and building our own cloud environments ourselves. We'll go through some of the design considerations you might want to consider. And then we've got a demo where we'll show you a real hybrid cloud scenario in action. There will be user participation, but the hook is there's a prize, and it's a good prize, so you probably want to be here for that bit. Just by way of introduction, my name is Craig Pringle. I'm the Cloud and Infrastructure Practice Manager for NCIST, and that means I've got a team of architects and engineers reporting into me that help customers manage this change in their environment. So we do the design and the build of infrastructure environments. We help design and connect up these hybrid cloud environments and help advise people and provide that thought leadership. What should you be putting into public cloud? What should be in your own environment? I'm joined on stage by Basil.
Thanks. I'm Basil Postolou. I'm the lead architect for the Cloud and Data Center of Excellence inside Optus Business. I manage a team of pre-sales architects that help customers build either their on-premises solutions, Optus managed cloud solutions, or public cloud solutions, or hybrid cloud solutions. I've been with Optus almost 6 years now. For the last four and a half to 5 years, I've actually been involved in part of the core team around the architectural governance and cloud products that we've actually been bringing to market over the last 5 years.
All right, thank you. So look, I want to start with a bit of a level set, and apologies, it seems like I'm preaching to the choir here, but I want to sort of define what I'm talking about when I'm talking about hybrid cloud, because not everyone talks about the same thing when they talk about hybrid cloud. So I'll put my hand up and say I'm not using a purist academic definition of hybrid cloud. That would be you have a private cloud environment, a true private cloud environment with automation and elasticity running in your environment, connecting to a true public cloud. The reality is that's not happening for a lot of organizations. They don't have this true private cloud environment themselves. And the reality for hybrid cloud for most organizations will be somewhat different. So I'm using a realist definition of hybrid cloud, and it's basically made up of three key things. Firstly, you've got to have some things running up in public cloud. They're fairly obvious, right? So it needs to be some components there, and we'll go through some of those in future slides. You've got to have some resources somewhere else, and this is probably the stuff you have today. And we'll go through that in more detail in a minute as well. And you've got to connect the two together. And if you've got those three things, then you do have hybrid cloud. Let's have a look at those in a little more detail.
Sorry, Craig. Guys, there are a fair few empty seats up the front here, so just make your way forward if you want. We'll save you standing up for 50-odd, 60 minutes.
Thanks. All right, so in terms of what you could be putting in public cloud, there's the sort of traditional mainstays of virtual machines and storage that have been around for a long time, so that's infrastructure as a service running up in a cloud environment. So spin up some VMs in Azure, obviously, that's infrastructure as a service. You've also got the platform as a service component, so things like the websites and the web services and mobile apps, databases, where you're not maintaining the operating system for those, but you're connecting the platform on a cloud environment. And last but not least is a software as a service. So if you think back to my definition of a hybrid cloud earlier, even something as simple as running Office 365 in the public cloud and having the Exchange hybrid running in your environment and having the two connected together, that does meet my definition of a hybrid cloud. Now, somewhere else. Largely, this is going to be physical or virtual machines that are running either on your premises, in your environment. You could be running them in a data center or in a colo environment. And this is the things you have today. So these are the environments you've been maintaining for a while. You could go and build yourself your own true private cloud environment based on something like Windows Azure Pack or Windows Azure Stack, and you could have that elastic capability inside your environment. That's perfectly valid. And we'll talk about when you might consider doing that later on. Or you could go and buy private cloud services from somewhere else. And we'll be showing this a bit later on, where we're running half of our demo environment on the Optus managed cloud environment. And lastly, there's connectivity. And this is really a broad spectrum of what you can cover in terms of connectivity. It starts from the very simple, which is the hybrid connection. Just out of interest, how many people even know what the hybrid connection exists? It's relatively new, so don't feel too bad. But it's like no one knows. That's good. I'm for a whole slot on this because I thought no one would know about it. There's the sort of more traditional point-to-site VPN and site-to-site VPN. You're probably fairly familiar with those concepts, I'd imagine. Point-to-site is a single machine connecting through, and that can be in either direction. So it can be a single machine running in Azure connecting back to on-premise or vice versa. And you've got the site-to-site VPN, where it's a traditional VPN. You can configure your routers to create a VPN from your environment onto the Azure environment. And last but not least is the express route. And again, I've got a whole slide on this one as well, because it's a little bit more complex than the other ones. But that's your high-end dedicated connectivity. Now, the hybrid connection is what we're going to use in our demo today. And we did that because it's kind of cool, and we thought you should know about it. But what hybrid connectivity allows you to do is it's targeting these PaaS workloads, so platform as a service, the web app or the mobile app running in Windows Azure. Now, inside of Azure, you then configure what's called the hybrid connection. And that hybrid connection is basically saying you're going to look for traffic destined for this server by host name. So in our case, our demo environment later on is SQL 02. And any connections to that server on the SQL port, we're going to send across the link to somewhere else. And when you configure this inside the Azure portal, it gives you a connection string. You then go install what's called the hybrid connection manager on a server that's on the same internal subnet as your resource that you're trying to access. And you give it this connection string, and it will basically proxy connections back and forth. So the hybrid connection manager has to be able to connect to Azure. So you need to open up a single port to allow that out to get to Azure. It will establish the connection from the hybrid connection manager running in your environment out to Azure, nothing established inbound. And it will proxy all requests to that database. The great thing about that is your developers don't need to understand this. They need to know they need to talk to a database called SQL 02 on the SQL port. It's actually not that hard. And through the magic of the hybrid connection, it's just going to proxy all those connections back and forth. It's really, really powerful. A great entry level into hybrid cloud. And as I said, we'll be showing this later today, so it's pretty good functionality. At the other end of the spectrum, we've got the express route. And the express route is different to the site-to-site and point-to-site VPNs. But it's not just about bandwidth. You can buy an express route as small as 50 meg. And you may still need to do that, even if you don't have significant bandwidth requirements, if you need performance out of a link. And the big differentiator you get with express route is you get carrier-applied quality of service. So it means you can control and shape that traffic and ensure that you get a good experience between. So there'll be plenty of cases where you need that. And of course, being a carrier service, it's basically like a tail into your own MPLS environment. You get SLAs and things like that on it. So if you've got performance or availability requirements, ExpressRoute could be the way to go. Or if you've got very high bandwidth requirements, as I said, they start around 50 megabits, they'll go up to 10 gig. So you get a wide range of services you can buy there for ExpressRoute. So basically, summing up with that, I'm just going to draw a picture. And basically, if you think everything above the line is running in Azure, so that's your public cloud scenario. Down below the bottom line, that could be either on-premises, colo, your data center in your office. It could be running in a private cloud somewhere. And in any scenario, whether you've got workloads split across the two and connecting via express route, whether you've got them split across the two and you're connecting via site-to-site VPN or you're connecting via hybrid connection, they're all hybrid cloud. And this is the realist definition of hybrid cloud. This is the kind of thing that we're actually going to be seeing in our organizations for the next few years. All right. I was pausing to let someone take a photo. Yes, you had a question? You need to create a single instance for each one that you're connecting through to, yeah. All right. All right, if the photo didn't come out, then come see me later. I can help you out. The slide deck will be available later on anyway. So why would you want to do this? Well, obviously, you want to take advantage of all the goodness you get with public cloud. You want that elasticity, and you want that endless capacity and the ability to scale. But if you've got hardware that's still under support and it's not fully depreciated, there's no point ripping everything off that now and putting it in the cloud, because you're just throwing away money, really, you know. You want to leverage what you've got now, but you don't want to invest in it. So you don't want to buy new kit to run stuff in your environment. So it's a matter of doing a bit of analysis and figuring out which workloads can I move off where it is now, which are going to be best to be targeted to that public cloud environment, moving those up, establishing the connectivity, and then you can take advantage of that scale that public cloud gives you without investing anything on your on-premises environment. Similarly, you could be locked into a vendor. So if you're using Colo or AWS, you might currently be locked with that vendor for a term contract. And again, you don't want to invest more into that, but you want to take advantage of the public cloud. So hybrid cloud is your answer. And probably the most common one we see is there are some things that you just aren't supported to run in Azure. And this is, we quite often have customers come up to us and say, we want to go all in, 100% everything running in the cloud, and we have to sort of talk them off the ledge and say, some things just don't make sense to run in the cloud, so you don't want to put those particular workloads up in public cloud, but some things can't run there, at least not in a supported fashion. And I've got some examples here of like Windows Server 2003 and the 32-bit versions of Server 2008, SQL 2005, none of those are supported to run in Azure. We've got Red Hat Linux there, which I will cross out now because 2 weeks ago they announced support for that. But again, that was a very common scenario we used to see for people wanting to run things in a private cloud. And even if you are running Red Hat or CentOS or something that is supported, you might not be running a version of the kernel that's supported in public cloud, so you need to do due diligence there. Similarly, there's a bunch of features inside Windows Server that just aren't supported to run in Azure. There's a link there that changes all the time, so you keep the link and check it every time you're looking to put something in Azure to see if it's supported or not. But there's some things on that list today that are still, most organizations want them, and like DHCP is a prime example of that. Most people do want that centralized control of DHCP, and that kind of needs to stay in your environment for now. Direct access is another very common role that we see. People want direct access, but it's not supported in Azure.
Thanks, Craig. So Craig's done a great job in level setting, why you should be considering it. And I just want to run you through, some things that you should consider before going to the cloud. And it's not even if, a lot of customers are probably already using cloud, but if they're not using it in anger, you still should think about these things before you, go at a bigger scale and then, possibly hamstring yourself and have a platform or clouds that you can't manage. But some of the things that you should consider is, what workloads do you want to put in cloud? And before you even identify that, you should be thinking about what are the business benefits that you're actually trying to achieve. Once you understand what those business benefits are, you can start to understand what are the options and features that you want out of either virtual private cloud or public cloud. And then once you start to unpick that, which cloud is right? Is it, the case of an Optus managed cloud, virtual private, or is it where the workload can go straight into public cloud? Or is it a mix? And then, as you start to understand those features and what you actually want to use in those different cloud environments, you start thinking about, some of your core services. If you're going to use cloud in anger, you want to lay some of those foundation services. And when you go build a new data center, the first thing you think about is, you know, how am I going to put authentication? How am I going to put my Active Directory in there? How am I going to put my antivirus, my backup, all that? And a lot of customers that start using cloud don't necessarily think about those aspects. And then all of a sudden, you've got these resources out in cloud that are either not protected, don't have antivirus, or aren't backed up. So think about those things. And then, you know, depending if you're, like Craig said, if you want to sweat out some of those on-premises solutions that you've invested in quite heavily, but you still want that agility of public cloud and you're going to build those hybrid cloud solutions, what's the connection that you're going to need? And, you know, connectivity, how do I connect? And Craig, you know, touched on those four different mechanisms. So, you know, planning for how the traffic will talk between public cloud and on-premises, and planning how you're going to consume that over the next 6 months, year, 2 years, is paramount. Because, you know, you may start with a site-to-site VPN and find that some of the flexibility around that is not well, and then you're going to move to ExpressRoute. Why not maybe start with ExpressRoute and grow the link from that 50 meg or anywhere up to 10 gig, you know, depending on what your requirements are with time. A couple more things to consider. Security. I think security is like a top of mind for anybody that's either using cloud or about to use cloud. And Brad Anderson covered security. You know, I think he labored on about 10 minutes of security in the keynote. But you know, one thing that I was surprised he didn't mention is that a lot of these public cloud providers and virtual public cloud providers actually have a lot of certification for the platform. They've got things like ISO 27000 certification, PCI certified. Recently, Azure was IRAPT assessed, so federal government can run unclassified workloads. So you know, these certifications come with a lot of dollars and a lot of processes that wrap around it, and they also generally trump what you have on your on-premises. But that's not a reason to forget about security when you do use public cloud. And what you should be considering about is, you know, I'm still going to want to probably put a created DMZ even in public cloud. I'm still going to want to do firewalling and load balancing and so on, but I can't necessarily deploy a physical firewall or a physical load balancer inside that cloud environment. So, you know, most big vendors now have got a virtualized edition of that. So if you're thinking about those things and if you're using whatever device it is that's physical, does that vendor make it in a physical, in a virtual edition, and therefore I can deploy that virtually inside the cloud platform, and I'm getting it from an operations perspective, a really consistent management pane of how I manage firewalls, regardless if they're in cloud or on my premises, and that then takes me really, you know, to how I manage it. In Australia, we're really spoilt for choice. You know, we have probably the two biggest public cloud providers here on our shores. We don't have to consume it from in America or Asia anymore. And there are, you know, a myriad of virtual private cloud providers like Optus that can provide you cloud solutions. But with that choice and flexibility comes possibly complexity, because if you're using more than one cloud provider, you're possibly managing workloads in different ways in those different cloud environments. So you should be thinking about what are the underlying tool sets on how you manage, deploy, patch and so on, and you know, ideally you have a common tool set that spans across those. If you don't do that, what will happen is that your operations staff will, you know, whilst the business may be more agile because they can spin up virtual machines and PaaS offerings in public cloud really easily and really quickly, but from an operations perspective, they're playing massive catch up, because now there are, you know, potentially hundreds of virtual machines that they're managing in, you know, two or three different cloud environments, and all done in an inconsistent way. So therefore, you know, from an operations perspective, actually taken away some of that agility and some of that promise that cloud is meant to bring around how easy it is to consume it, because, you know, managing it is actually really hard when you're not doing it in a single common way. Stories from the trenches. So, you know, we wanted to share with you what we've found in a combination of building our cloud products and also as we've built solutions for our customers. I'm going to labour a little bit more on connectivity. So, again, just plan how you're going to use cloud and how much you're going to use cloud. What you'll find is that as you move, you know, if you're following the model of cloud where you're moving a lot more new workloads or legacy workloads that need to be retired into cloud, your bandwidth requirements into cloud are going to grow. So, you know, try to predict what you're going to use over the next couple of years, and you know, you should probably seriously be looking at things like ExpressRoute, because it becomes an extension of your network. You know, it becomes a carrier. It's a carrier link that, you know, hangs off your core router inside your data center or your headquarters, back into the public cloud provider. A couple of good points I want to touch on in regards to using VPN on Azure. Static routing is really, really quick and easy to use. But what we're finding a lot of customers, as they want to use more services in Azure, you can't connect more than two connections to a VNet. More than one connection to the VNet. The second you need to use a second connection, you need to move to dynamic routing. To change that from static to dynamic, you actually need to bring the gateway down and recreate it as a dynamic. That could mean downtime if you're using production workloads in Azure. Right now, depending on where you are and what kind of firewalls you're using, it's possible that your firewall may not support dynamic routing. So a good workaround solution is using a Windows 2012 RS server. It actually can do dynamic routing out of the box. I want to talk about people for a minute. Too often we dive in and think about the technology. We think about what are the outcomes that we're going to get out of cloud. From a people perspective, are you really ready to adopt hybrid cloud or public cloud? I had a really, really good meeting with a customer about 3 months ago. He was the IT operations manager for infrastructure. And they were about to embark on cloud, and they wanted to understand some of the gotchas, like what we're talking about today. And I stood back and I said, what's the business need? Why do you actually want to use cloud? He goes, well, I don't really know. He goes, the CIO had an interstate trip and came off the plane and saw an advertising banner about cloud. Yeah, because they came to me and said, why aren't we using cloud? I don't know if any of you can relate with that or not, but you really need to understand why you want to use it. And when you understand why you want to use it, start to think about your people. Are your people trained to take advantage of public cloud? And you should be thinking about, DevOps and doing everything in code. Because the second you can move from, in your operations, if you're working in a silo where you have, a network guy, a storage guy, a virtualization guy, an AD guy, you're going to find that you're probably not going to be able to unleash a lot of the public cloud capabilities unless you've got that DevOps and that programming capability. Processes. By processes, what I mean is, do you have processes that will actually work with public cloud? You've probably got processes that work really well in your legacy physical, or you're probably running quite a virtualized environment. And you have a way of either ordering servers and so on into your business, and possibly if you're advanced, you've got some kind of chargeback. Will those processes work in public cloud? Whilst I'm saying you should take care of or have some processes in mind for how you're going to consume public cloud, you don't want the processes to be so heavy that you actually make the agility of using public cloud hard for the business unit. So you want that middle ground. And in particular, what we're seeing, if you don't have the processes, a lot of customers go and spin up test dev workloads, don't turn them off, which is what cloud's there for. You use it, turn it off. They don't turn them off and they get that bill shock at the end of the month. So have some processes so when people go to consume that, they can follow them and you won't get that kind of bill shock. And then lastly, we'll touch on technology. By technology, I'm talking more about your service management tools. CMDB in particular, can your CMDB keep up with you spinning resources up and down? Do you want to even track it? And if you want that kind of chargeback and that kind of look and feel where you're tracking all servers, regardless if they're in your environment or not, can your service management tools actually keep up with that? And consider those. If they can't, you should be thinking about, again, mapping back to the keynote, Brad talked about all the new features that are coming out in System Center and Operations Manager suite. You're getting that single tool set now that regardless if it's on your premises, a virtual private cloud or public cloud, you're getting that tool set that can monitor workloads regardless of where they are. Then lastly on this deck, again, Brad talked about Azure, Azure Pack, and Azure Stack. So, if you're large enough and you're thinking about, the Azure Stack, think about what are the prerequisites? Why would you want to build something like that back in your data center? Now, if you're large and you've got bespoke requirements and you've got some security concerns, you're probably going to, they may be some of the reasons why you want to consume that. The Optus Managed Cloud is built on the Azure Pack. You know, maybe you want to go to a service provider and buy that. Just considering around public Azure, whilst there are some limitations on public Azure, so a good example of that is drive sizes. There are ways around it. And as these features come out so fast, you know, most of us are lazy. We all hate reading the manual. So you'll go and spin it up and create it and find that it doesn't quite do what you want to do, and then you go, you know, Google some articles and research and so on. So there are ways around it. You know, a good example is the drive sizes. So you can actually, whilst the drive sizes are limited in what size you can create multiple drives and then span them across. So there are workarounds for certain elements. I'll switch back to Craig.
Cool. Thanks, Baz. So basically, I just want to, we're going to walk you through our demo environment now. So first, we're going to sort of tell you how the demo is going to work. Then we'll jump into the actual environments, and we'll show you what we've set up. So that when we actually get into the user participation point of the part of the demo, you'll understand what's going on. So what we're going to do is we're going to run a nice scalable web front end in Azure. Now, so this is configured as a web application, so it's platform as a service, and we've configured that to auto scale. So when it's sitting there doing nothing, it's going to just have one instance of the web application. Servicing all the user requests that are coming in. But as it gets busier, it's gonna decide, oh, I need some help to handle this, and it's going to basically spin out a second instance. And you can scale beyond two, but I've capped it at two for the purpose of the demo. So that's that true elasticity of public cloud that it's really easy to do in Azure. This is actually quite hard to build in your environment. So you're only paying for what you're using, and it's you know, the real benefits of public cloud. But it's reading and writing to a database that can't run in Azure. So we've got a SQL 2005 backend running on 32-bit Windows 2003. How much fun is that to develop these days? So you know, like I say, you could do this in your environment. It's quite hard. If you do the whole thing in your environment, you can do it, but it's quite hard. You can't do it all in Azure. So hybrid cloud is absolutely the best way to do this. Now let me show you what the environment looks like. So as I said earlier, we've got the web application, and we've configured the hybrid connection. So from the web application point of view, it's just talking to a SQL server on the SQL port. That hybrid connection will then send it across the internet to the hybrid connection manager. And that will effectively proxy all the SQL traffic through to the SQL backend. And then these guys up here, and you'll be hitting that website if you want to try and win a prize. So this is what it looks like. So we're going to put up a hyperlink that you can for a website that you can hit. With a device of your choice. On the page, it looks a little bit different to this, but I'll show it to you before we actually do the demo as well live, but you basically, you enter some details, and we've actually got name as well. You don't have to use your real name, that's fine. Mobile number, I would suggest you use your real mobile number. That's how we confirm we have the right person if we have a conflict. But I'll point out as well, we're not going to keep this information. End of this demo, the database gets trashed. No one's going to be, you know, spamming you for the next 6 years on that SMS number, right? So it's really only so that we can validate we've got the right person if they win. So check in a phone number, click enter. Now what the web app's then going to do is going to write that back into the database, so we've got a record of it, and it's going to write the time, the name, the phone number, and the instance that it's come from, right? And it'll actually display that on the app. So as people are entering on the app, you'll see the attendee list growing, and they'll all be coming from the same place initially, and then eventually someone's going to come from the new instance. Now, to make sure that definitely happens, after we write back to the database, we've got a function that we've called pig squeal, and the whole purpose of this is just to behave badly on the web server. It literally does until pigs can fly, which is false, just do a bunch of calculations and burn some CPU and go around in circles and just keep doing that indefinitely. So the net effect of that is every time someone submits a phone number into the database, it's going to use a little bit more CPU, and it ramps up fairly quickly. So you can see that's how we're going to trigger the autoscale. And the first person who comes from the new instance, from the timestamp and the phone number that we get in there, and we can see which instance it's on, is going to win a prize. And I've got a slight confession, that's a Surface Pro 3. That's not the prize.
That's the prize.
Didn't want to give away the old one, so we've got a Surface Pro 4 that we'll be giving away. It's not available yet, because they've only just launched last week. There's none available in the country. If anyone's tried to buy one, they're very, very hard to get. But what we'll do is the winner will get the nicely laminated certificate, and we'll get you a Surface Pro 4. But we thought it was better than giving you an old one today, you know. So it's going to be pretty good. So let's have a look at the demo environment. I'll just switch you over to that one, isn't it? Yep. All right.
So what you're actually seeing here is a preview of the new Optus Managed Cloud offering, in particular Microsoft. So as I mentioned, Optus has had a few cloud products over the last 5 years. And you know, hopefully in the next fortnight, we'll be releasing our latest offering, which is the Microsoft offering. So this is the landing page for the Optus Managed Cloud products, regardless of if it's our backup offering, our storage, our server offering. But we're here to talk about the Microsoft offering, so let me just quickly dial into that. You'll see in a minute, the options here are not quite Azure yet. We've built this on the Azure pack, but because we're a service provider and because we have, you know, the way we do MPLS inside our cloud platform to deal with things like overlapping IP addresses and multi-tenancy and security, we've had to abstract some of the features out of the Azure pack back into our service catalog here. So here you can create, you know, firewall and networks. And then once you create your firewalls, you can do your standard stuff like your PATs, your NATs, your DMZs, and then create your VLANs. And then once you go into manage my VMs, that's where you're going to see the Azure pack. So on this, we have two availability zones, Sydney and Melbourne at the moment, and you can subscribe to either availability zone or just the one. And then once you come into this, you're actually going to see, this is where the Azure pack kicks in, and you're going to see a very, very, very similar look and feel to Azure. So what you see there is a list of virtual machines. So as Craig touched on, that server there is the server that's running the Hybrid Connection Manager. It's running on a Windows 2012 box. And here's our SQL 02 server. So let me just explain what you see here a little bit. So because we're a virtual private cloud, we're not public cloud, we're not trying to compete with the likes of Amazon or Azure. What we've done is we've set an upper limit for customers. So that's what's depicted there by the light gray. So that's your upper resource pool in the amount of cores, RAM, and storage that you can consume. And then the dark gray then starts to drill down into what you've assigned to your virtual machine. So in the previous screen, you saw a list of virtual machines. So the dark gray there is depicting what I've assigned out of my pool. And the light green is what's assigned to this actual virtual machine. Before I log into SQL 02, I'll just show you a couple other features quickly. From a billing perspective, if I can get the right screen, we've taken a lot of time to show chargeback for our platform for our customers. So, this will marry back to the Optus bill that you'll get, but you'll be able to come in here and see a lot of granular reporting around each individual virtual machine, how many hours it was spun up, who created the virtual machine, the storage attached to it, and so on. So, you can start to see that, and we can start to do reports. If you've got sub-organizations or business units, you can start to do chargeback with that. So we've taken a lot of time to actually to do that outside of the Azure pack. From a portal perspective, from the Azure pack, really standard stuff. As I said, create a virtual machine. Add accounts to the subscription, and et cetera. For the sake of the demo, I'm just going to dive into SQL 02. We're going to all... And we're all going to quickly hop in the time machine and go back to 2003. Of doing a live demo. who's worked 1,000 times before.
That's actually a normal
2,000. All right, cool. So what we've got here is the actual SQL server. Let's maximize that. All right, and we'll show you that this pigs can fly database is actually So the pigs can fly database is actually running. So you know, as Craig explained, the Hybrid Connection Manager is coming through Azure into the 2012 box on our platform, talking to this SQL server. And I'll let Craig jump on and explain the Azure side of it.
Cool. Right. So. Wanted to go into this, and first thing I'll point out, this is actually real Azure now. So this is the public cloud, really similar look and feel. So that was probably the beauty of the Windows Azure and Windows Azure PAC combination is people who have learned one can easily find their way around the other. This is our little web application, and we'll go into that. And I just want to show you that the scale settings that we've got set in there, and I'll explain what they're doing. So as you can see, we've chosen a very small instance, so one core. So it's not particularly powerful to start with. I've configured a minimum and a maximum number of instances, so I will only scale up as far as two. If you guys keep going after that, you will kill it. And that's part of the demo, that's fun. And then I'm targeting the CPU. So what those two settings indicate, the 15 and 20%, I've set them fairly low because I want to get to this fairly quickly. But at 20% CPU, it's going to say, oh, I'm worried, I'm getting too busy, I'm going to introduce another instance. Normally that would be up around 80%. You scale up at around 80, I've pulled it right down. And the lower limit of that is when it's consistently back down to 15%, it'll scale back down and go back to one. So that's the scaling. What I'm going to do now is I'm just going to pop over to the Azure preview portal because the hybrid connection isn't actually visible in the current portal. But inside the preview portal, you can see if I scroll across, this is just drilling down. I've saved myself a few clicks, but drilling down from the same Pigs Can't Fly web app, gone down into the network settings, and here's your hybrid connection manager. And if you go and configure that, or not. It's bizarre, it's not letting me click the link. I'll just kill this blade. Go back in. Okay, so I won't belabor the point. All that's going to do is when it pops up, it shows the configuration of the Hybrid Connection Manager, and all you would have seen is it's connecting to a host name, SQL02, on port 1433. So just bog standard SQL stuff. And like I said earlier, developers don't need to understand what's sitting behind this. They develop the web application just like they would if it was sitting next to the database, and it will just work for them. So apologies for the portal playing up today. All right. So I suppose without further ado,
you all got your devices ready?
Yep, so we'll switch back to the demo. Actually, one thing I will do, just before I do that, so late edition, I thought I'll actually jump into, so this is the same website, right, that you'll be hitting in a minute. And it'll look slightly different on your screens because they're slightly smaller. But you'll see there's an attendee list, and I'm just going to chuck it in. So you click the Add button. I'm not allowed to win, so I'll go first. And I'm not going to put my real number because no one's going to call me. There's no data validation on this, so if you put something wrong in there, it's not going to work and you don't win. But I'm going to save that, and you'll see that the attendee list will start to populate. So after I put the demo URL up and everyone's clicking away, go ahead and enter as many times as you want. Doesn't matter. I'll switch back to this window and keep refreshing it, and we'll be able to see that list building out, and we'll see the one that comes from a new instance. All right. So the Great Flying Pig demo, here we go. So before I put the URL up, I'll just say this is obviously the URL is going to be a shortened link. Two things to know about it. One is it's HTTP, but it redirects to a secure URL, so no one's going to be grabbing your phone numbers off the Wi-Fi if they feel like sniffing the Wi-Fi. The other thing is the second half of the URL, because it's a bit.ly URL, is case sensitive. So it's got a couple of capital letters in it. Make sure you reflect that. All right. Have at it.
Go.
All these Optus people with their phones. You can't win.
Yeah.
If you guys win, someone else gets it. All right, so you want to refresh that, see if we start getting some results. I'll leave the URL up for a bit longer. Few people looking up at the window. So if anyone was having trouble with the Wi-Fi before, it's going to be a lot worse now. Responding guys, or is it we just killed it? No, it's not loading for me either, so it might actually be the network. I did say we would kill it. Yeah.
If we kill the Wi-Fi,
it's that problem. Right.
Try to go 3G or 4G if the Wi-Fi's not working.
Yeah, no, absolutely are smashing it. It's great. So the website's taking a hammering.
You mean all of us get one?
Nah. Nice try. No, there will be a result in there somewhere. There will be one that comes from the new.
You did your credit card thing together.
Yeah, it is. That's why I put the upper limit on it. So I'm not crazy. Yeah. So I win, all right. It's all right now, so we have killed it. 3,000 requests. That's pretty good. won't put it up on the screen, but what I'm going to do is go have a look in the actual database itself and see if we can get a result from that. I don't want to expose phone numbers. Bruce, are you jumping in? I'll get Bruce to have a look at that. So look, while we see if we can get to the result, I might just carry on. All right, so Bruce is going to look into that and see if we can get the actual result of the database. I didn't think we'd kill it that spectacularly, but it's pretty good. Any questions on the session today? No? Comments, yeah? Yep.
Is that production ready, or is that just more for test and dev?
I think it really depends on your use case. So I think it can be production ready, but it is a relatively simple connection. And if you have a website where you just want to dip into some legacy line of business applications and pull a little bit of information out, it'll work fine for that, absolutely fine. But if it's going to be something where you need really high end SQL traffic, you're better off redeveloping that database and moving it onto a platform that's a lot newer. Because the not so much the just the hybrid connection, but also the database itself might not scale high enough to support the load that you can put on it. Oh, this is the joy of live demos. There's a couple other things I'll draw your attention to while we wait. So still to come. Myself and Basil will be in the Optus ThinkSpace, which is a little glass fishbowl, on Friday at lunchtime. So if you've got any questions, feel free to come and see us then for Ask the Expert session. Or you can just come and chat to us at the stand. We'll be around most of the time. Most of the breaks will be there. And there's plenty of other people from Optus who can help you as well. There's some really, really good technical sessions coming up. And three of these are run by a colleague of mine called James Bannon. He's an excellent presenter, and he's got these three sessions I've listed up here. They're 400 level, so very, very technical. Cooking in the Cloud is looking at, I suppose, the DevOps that Basil referred to earlier, and infrastructure as code. So instead of building a server, you completely automate the provisioning of that server, and if there's a problem with that server, you don't try and fix it. You just blow it away and reprovision it. It's pretty cool stuff. It's a real mind shift for a lot of IT people. It's like moving away from treating your servers like their pets and treating them more like their cattle and just automate the process of maintaining them. He'll also do a session. That one is today at 3:30. He's also doing a session on resiliency in Azure. So hopefully he can fix my little website. And that one's tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. And his last one is going to be the Freddy versus Jason, which is how to build your cloud with Azure Resource Manager. So again, it's around automating and provisioning things. I've got another session tomorrow as well, where we'll be talking about Enterprise Mobility Suite. So if you saw the stuff that Brad was demonstrating in the keynote, I've got a lot of both user and admin demos from EMS. So if you're interested in finding out more about that, it would be good. That one's tomorrow at 9:45 a.m. All right. And the website is still completely dead. You got one? Oh, sorry.
Cool, that one.
That's the winner?
Yep.
All right, so if your phone rings, you might have won. It's ringing. Hey, well done. Congratulations. So there, someone managed to get through.
Well
so.
Done.
All right. All right.
You'll get a reward, I promise. Come and see Anna at the stand and she'll fix you up with it, all right?
Thank yeah.
Thank you. Well done.
All right, thank you. All right, so we did get there in the end. What I'll do is I'll leave the website up there for a little while before we go and delete the database. So if you want to have a look later on and see how many people actually managed to get through, you'll be able to see that, and you'll be able to see that the instance name displayed on the attendee changes at some point. All right. Very good. So that's it from us. Just remember, please complete your evaluations and feel free to cane the demo. That's fine. It's all fair in love and war. There's some great prizes to be won for that as well. So if you missed out on the Surface Pro 4, then there's other opportunities there for you. Today is a day in a 3-day conference, 4-day conference, but there's plenty more stuff to learn. There's heaps of good content on the Virtual Academy, so I'd encourage you to check that out. So thanks very much for attending, and if there's any questions, feel free to ask them or come up and see us at the end or come down to the stand later on. Thank you.
Thanks, all. Thank you. Yeah, you should.